Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Jillie McMillan, who's the New York Times bestselling author and out with her new novel, I Know You Know. In the novel, Scott and Charlie were beaten to death in Bristol, England, and their bodies were discovered near a dog raising track. 20 years later, Sidney, a mentally challenged adult who was convicted of the crime, committed suicide in his prison cell. And a couple of months after the suicide, Cody Swift, he's the book's protagonist and the podcaster, he was friends with both Scott and Charlie back many years ago. He returns to Bristol to re-examine the events and investigations surrounding the crime, and he does this with his podcast as the backdrop. It's really cool how that worked, but Charlie's mother, Jess, is less than thrilled about Cody trying to probe into old wounds, and Detective Inspector John Fletcher has to review his old case files and as a long dead body is found near the same location where Scott and Charlie's bodies were found during the excavation for a new shopping center. The book takes us back and forth between the present day and the original investigation with the help of the podcast. It's really a book within a book, so you get to enjoy it twice, the story. Jillie, when anyone reexamines a decades-old crime, particularly a murder, what practical challenge does that pose to the due to the passage of time?
I think it poses challenges in terms of what evidence is still available to look at. It poses challenges in terms of what people remember, and also whether they are willing to revisit the crime and all the emotions surrounding it. I think while some people long for closure, many people don't ever want to revisit what happened.
I know that in books like Gone Girl, Girl on the Train, you had the aspect of a unreliable narrator because of alcoholism or whatever it happens to be. In this book, The Passage of Time, does that also serve to make some of the characters unreliable?
I think it does. I think it certainly can do. I think memory can degrade in a matter of hours, let alone years, and also people change so very much over the years. And their agendas can change during that time, which adds another layer of potential unreliability.
For someone like Cody, the podcaster, he was very close to the original murder victims. What problems can arise from an investigation that's conducted by someone who's so intertwined with the victims and, in fact, could have been a victim himself?
I suppose he is not as objective as he might be, and it also raises an awful lot of very difficult emotions for him when he revisits, for example, his friend's mothers and that sort of thing. So it's probably not the best person to go back and reinvestigate, but it does make it very powerful as a result.
Well, and I've never read a novel before that had a podcast as a hook for a major part of the story. What is it about podcasting in general that appealed to you for Cody's part of the story?
I'm an absolute true crime podcast addict. I love them. And I think one of the reasons I love them most is because they talk to the victims' families. So very often when you see reporting on crime, you maybe hear a police report or report of court activity, but you don't often get real deep insight into how the victims coped with the tragedy and how they cope with it, not just a week later, but a year later or 20 years later. And I think podcasts really give you that, and I thought that would just be a fascinating premise for a novel as well.
I've never listened to a true crime podcast, and I know I probably should, but it's just not some art form that I indulge in. But when you hear victims' families talk, do they all sound the same, or do you find yourself amazed by the varying degrees of emotional whatever it is that they happen to display on those podcasts?
Yeah, it's very much the latter. They have a wide range of reactions. I mean, you hear some tremendous grief and sadness, obviously, but then there are others who are just not willing to reopen old wounds because they found a way to move on. And it's a really fascinating thing, and to listen to their raw responses and also the thoughts they've had over the years and what they've come to terms with and how they've done that.
I know as I read the book, I kept thinking in my mind about the idea of closure at any cost after a family tragedy. And, you know, this case was the murders of these two young men 20 years ago was handled nice and tight and clean. A man got convicted of the crime, went to prison. And so
does it seem to you that sometimes you'll have victims or survivors who want closure at any cost, whether it's the right person in jail for the crime or not?
I think that could possibly happen, just so that they can try and have an answer to the why of why it happened. I think the other people who are perhaps prone to wanting an outcome like that are the investigators and possibly even some of the lawyers involved if it goes to trial. It's nice and neat for them as well.
Well, Detective Inspector John Fletcher has to reopen his investigation into this double murder. And as you talk to law enforcement, or just maybe as you created Fletcher's character, what kinds of things are going through his mind as really his work is being second-guessed?
I think he finds it very uncomfortable. I think also what's interesting about John Fletcher is what's happened to him over the passage of time. When he first worked on the case, he was, you know, fairly young and up-and-coming and ambitious. And when we meet him in the present day, he clearly didn't get as far as he wanted to go. And we wonder why. And I think that's a really interesting thing, and it speaks a lot to how he copes with reopening the investigation, which he does very reluctantly.
When you talk to law enforcement, how does murders of children affect them personally, not just in their job, but when they go home at night and have to sleep?
It's something that I speak to two retired detectives for my books, and they talk fairly openly because they're retired and they had years and years of experience, but they struggle to speak about things like that, and I think that really says it all. These things can really stay with people who work in law enforcement and medical care and stuff like that. They witness things that are outside of the experience of many of us, and I think it takes a tremendous toll.
When they talk openly to you, do you find that they're, I mean, when you try to talk to current law enforcement people, they won't talk as openly?
I haven't tried because my two detectives are such fabulous sources for me, but I think that they can be more free because they're no longer working within the force. And they also are able to talk about the way detective work has changed over sort of 20, 30 years, which is really interesting and particularly relevant to this book, to I Know You Know.
In a perfect world, when there's an investigation of a murder, everyone tells the truth and we get to the bottom of the story. And I always joke that the courtroom is the last place the truth ever comes out. But do you find that as you create these witnesses that you have to remember all of their biases as you're putting their stories on the page?
Yes, absolutely. That's a real challenge, but that's a challenge I absolutely love because I like all my characters and I can imagine them all very, very vividly, so I enjoy that.
And you don't plot out the characters, do you? I mean, they just develop as you write?
Yeah, that's right. I kind of start with a fairly strong idea of a character and a setup, and I have a very loose idea of the ending, but I let it develop as I write. It does mean I have to do a lot of work at edit stage.
And you use multiple perspectives throughout the book, and Detective Fletcher, Cody, Charlie's mother. When you use these different perspectives, how does that shape the narrative versus just using strictly a third party exclusively?
I enjoy it because I believe it's a little bit like watching a film. You know, if you see a party in a movie, you often see it from lots of different angles. The camera will zoom in on one character, then zoom in on another. We might get a little detail here and there. And you build up a picture from lots of different aspects and through different people's experiences. And that's why I enjoy doing it in novels. I think it can make for a richer novel.
As you write a novel like this, which is a page-turner, I'll just admit it, I couldn't put the thing down. I read it in one sitting. When you write that, are you thinking about the reader as you write?
Yeah, all the time. And when I read back what I've written, I think, would I turn the page if I read this? Because I'm first and foremost a reader. I'm a writer second. I'm a reader first. So I think if this wouldn't make me turn the page, I'll cut it and rewrite it until it does. So it's super important to me that.
As you read, I'm sure you read a lot of thriller books and just different books. Do you have any problem putting a book down if you don't like it, or do you always see it through to the end?
I will put it down if I don't like it, because I think there are so many more good books out there. There are too many to read, so why waste your time on one you don't love?
Well, do you have a specific page? I'll read it up to page 30. I mean, if I don't like it, or will you say, I'll give it to page 100 or whatever?
I would kind of give it until I just think, oh, enough already, and that might be page 5 or it might be page 30. If I get to page 50 or 60, I'm probably in it for the whole thing.
All right. Well, this book, I got to page 50 and just kept going. It's Jillie McMillan's new book, I Know You Know. It's available now wherever your books are sold, and you can also get it in electronic format if you're into the electronic readers. Jillie, a fantastic offering here. It entertained me, and it just kept me guessing the entire way, literally right up until the very last couple of pages. Thank you for putting it out, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so very much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Everybody knows.